Dan Walters has been a journalist for over 63 years, spending all but a few of those years working for California newspapers. At one point in his career, at age 22, he was the nation's youngest daily newspaper editor. After three newspaper editor positions, he joined the Sacramento Union's Capital Bureau in 1975. In 81, he began writing the state's only daily newspaper column devoted to California political, economic, and social events. In 84, he moved to the Sacramento Bee. He's written more than 10,000 columns. He's appeared in dozens of California newspapers. Midway 2017, Dan left the Sacramento Bee, went online to Cal Matters, calmatters.org. He's written several books, and for some reason, he's gracious enough to talk to me periodically. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Dan Walters.
You're welcome. Hello.
And I will add...
Happy President's Day.
Happy President's Day. I will add that we recorded our conversation during the break where you promised to list your house with me in Sacramento.
Yes, and on the hopes that some of your rich Santa Barbara people would think, God, that's a bargain. I got to buy that house.
Well, you bought a new house nearby. You downsized. Just quickly, yeah. What did you buy? What did it, you know, the size? What did it cost? And what are you going to sell?
Well, I moved from a 2,600 square foot house where I lived for 20 years, and my wife died, as you know, about a year and a half ago. And I had to go through all of her stuff, and she is a collector of many little treasures. And I figured as long as I got to do that, I might as well just change houses. That way I can kill two birds with one stone, so to speak. And so I bought a 1,300 square foot house, half the size, about three blocks from my old house. And a very nice house, smaller, obviously, but all completely redone. It's basically like a new house because it's completely remodeled from stem to stern. And so I've moved in, and I'm still going to have the famous estate sale and then put the house up for sale probably in April, probably.
Well, that's lovely. You were able to do it that way. It takes off all the pressure. And do you want to disclose any prices or?
Well, it's an interesting, it's very typical of the kind of the real estate market, I think, in many ways. My wife and I bought the house 20 years ago, well, 21 years ago now, for $670,000. It's a four-bedroom, three-bath, 2,600 square feet, quarter-acre lot in a very nice neighborhood. So 20 years later, 21 years later, I guess I should say, 20 years later, I buy a house three blocks away that's half the size, and it costs $10,000 more than I paid for the other house 20 years ago. And so I paid $680,000 for the second house, and again, it's exactly half the size. And the old house, now I call it my old house now, well, the county says it's worth $930,000. For tax purposes, and Zillow says 1.1 million, so somewhere in that range, I hope to have.
Yeah, and I would imagine. And this is in the what area of Sacramento?
It's in the unincorporated area of Sacramento, east of downtown Sacramento. Very nice neighborhood. It's an area called Arden Oaks, one of the better upscale neighborhoods in the city, and. Yeah, it's a very nice house in a very nice, quiet neighborhood, and has swimming pool and, you know, all the stuff and various sorts of things that you have with houses like that. And so it's a nice house, and it makes somebody a nice family house.
Well, congratulations. And let's see, your wife died a year and a half ago?
Yeah, in July of 2023.
Oh, gosh. And I should know this off the top of my head, but of course, as a married couple, you could defer the first $500,000 in capital gains.
And if I sell it by next July 5, you have a two-year window for that.
The two-year window. And it used to be you had to sell it within the same calendar year, even if your spouse died in November. And then they changed it, and I couldn't remember. Now it's 2 years. Oh, good. So you'll get in. You'll get in with that.
Well, if I sell the house fast, it's. I think if I don't get it sold by July 5th, I think the $250,000 offset would probably cover it, actually. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
Heck, you get all the deductions of the, you know, the house price and all that kind of stuff. And I think we'd probably work out about right.
And maybe you so increase.
It's not a big thing. It's just, you know, it's just one of those things.
Maybe you increase the basis at all? Did you do any major capital improvements?
All
right. Yeah. Well, there you go. Well, okay. I'll come up with a for sale sign in April. We'll put it in front of your house. So my guess.
Very nice lady by the name of Roberta Janecki, who helped me find my house. I'm going to list it with her when the time comes to list it. She's already telling me what I have to do to get it ready. So.
Yeah, you know what she's telling you to do? She's telling you to call me. My guess.
Like I say, some rich person from Santa Barbara wants to get a bargain, they can come up here to Sacramento, where housing prices are probably half.
Dan
Walters. One third of what they are in Santa Barbara.
And Dan Walters lived here. I mean, that should, you know, add premium. My guest, Dan Walters, syndicated columnist for almost as long as I've been alive, and he is now at CalMatters.org.
Well, maybe longer. When were you born?
56.
Okay. So it is, okay, a little bit less.
Close. Dan writes columns now for CalMatters.org. And one recent column, Salt in Old Wounds, California Taxes on Wealth May Hinge on How Trump Treats Deductions. Salt is state and local taxes, and that includes property tax, right?
Yes, property taxes and state income taxes and sales taxes, all the other taxes that local government and state government levy.
And your taxes will go down if you're currently paying on $900,000. You bought a $670,000 house.
Yeah, they'll go down a little bit.
They'll go down a little.
Yeah, they'll go down a little bit. It's very interesting. You know, people talk about Proposition 13 of depressing taxable values, but actually, over the last 21 years, that 2% thing that you can do on Proposition 13 actually matches quite well with what the actual market value of the house is now. So I'm actually paying taxes on basically the market value of the house despite Proposition 13. Of course, there's also the other part of Proposition 13, the 1% limit. But in terms of the valuation, the 2% has been exactly what I've experienced over that time.
Did you get a tax reduction? Oh, I was talking about this in the first segment when prices went down in 2009, 10, 11, or 10, 11.
Yeah, I did. I get a little one. The assessor in Sacramento County did it automatically. I didn't have to apply for it. And then, of course, once the market pucked up, they kicked it back up again.
But so, to the max of 2%.
Yeah,
we'll see. I bet you'll sell it for more than your basis of 900 and change.
We'll find out. You know, you know better than I. The real estate market is hard to predict. But it's a nice house, and you know, should attract some interest in.
But what about this Salt? You know, I mean, what happened with 1% of California's paying? What is that ratio?
Half of the income taxes are paid by the top 1%, the state income taxes, and the way that. Historically, the tax bite on everyone, but particularly those with high incomes, could be offset by the fact that you could deduct state and local tax payments from your taxable income at the federal level. And this has been there forever, right, for a long time. And then when Trump was president the other time around, back in 2017, as part of the big tax overhaul that they did at that time, they limited the write-off for state and local taxes, SALT, to $10,000. But they did also other things. They changed some tax rates, and they also increased the standard deduction. So the SALT limit basically affects states such as California that had high income tax rates. And California's rate is the highest of any state. Because limiting the write-offs that people at the upper echelon of the income ladder to take meant that their taxes, their federal taxes, went up because they could not deduct their state and local taxes other than $10,000. And so the governors of these blue states, mostly blue states with high income tax thing, California and New York particularly, complained that what it was a retaliation against blue states by a Republican Congress and Donald Trump. And ever since, they have been trying to get it to be changed, to go back either to raise the limit or to go back to full deduction for state and local taxes. And Trump has apparently done something of a 180-degree move on the thing, kind of indicates that he's open to changing that SALT limit. And there's some negotiations, well, maybe that's too strong a word, but some talking going on in Congress over whether that has, they're going to do a new tax bill because a lot of the provisions of that 2017 thing are running out. They're expiring soon. So they got to do a new tax bill. And the question is whether that SALT limit will be retained in the new tax bill or whether it will be either raised or eliminated altogether. And it's a typical tax situation. The standing rule of taxation, whether at the state level or the federal level, is that all taxation is arbitrary. It doesn't have anything necessarily to do with rationality or common sense. It's just arbitrary. Whether you tax this or you don't tax that, it's a very arbitrary thing, and it makes it a very political thing. It involves a lot of political trade-offs.
Let me ask something to go back to something you said earlier. When in 2017, they maximized the write-off to $10,000, but you said they changed others. They doubled deduction, and they changed something else. So for some wealthy people, was it a wash? Did they gain? Did they take from one hand and give to another hand?
No, they didn't. Nobody knows for sure because taxation is its individual fingerprints. But some wealthy people benefited from the decrease in the tax rates sufficiently to offset the loss of the SALT deduction. Others didn't. Mm. It all depends on their individual circumstances. For people that lower on the income scale, there was probably a benefit to the change. I guess I'll be candid about my situation. I didn't have enough write-offs to beat the standard deduction. Ever since that law's passed, I've taken the standard deduction every single year because I don't have enough state and local taxes to be worthwhile and other things. To be worthwhile to deduct. I can't beat the standard deduction. I think that's true of a lot of people. They can't beat the standard deduction because the standard deduction was not only raised, but it's indexed. So it's gone up every year.
Right, but of course, you're not I guess maybe you technically are an independent contractor, but it's not as if you have a lot of expenses.
No, I'm not. I'm an employee.
Oh, you are?
Employee of CalMatters, yeah.
My guest, Dan Walters, an employee of CalMatters. So I read, I don't know if you wrote it, but that current $10,000 amount might double to $20,000, which would therefore include a lot more people. You mentioned that 50% of the state income tax is paid by 1% of the population. Do you have any idea what percentage of the state population don't pay any state tax?
I don't know about any, but California has a very, very so-called progressive income tax scheme, and people at the lower economic rungs on the ladder pay little or no state income tax. And in fact, the state even has an earned income benefit where people who don't pay income taxes actually get tax rebates from the earned income tax rebate. So in some cases, they're not only not paying taxes, but are getting actually money back from the government. So basically, this is a very progressive system. The vast majority, the one percenters are paying half of the state income taxes, and state income taxes are between two-thirds and three-quarters of all the state general revenue. So this is a significant thing. But if you put in the top 5%, maybe 10% of taxpayers in California, they're paying virtually all of the income tax.
Wow. Virtually all. Wow. That's impressive.
It's also dangerous because that means you have a very narrow tax base, and the incomes of the, particularly the very wealthy, are not just salaries. They earn money on their investments, capital gains, and capital gains is a very volatile revenue source. It can go up and down like a yo-yo. And when it goes down, the state takes a big beating on revenues. And when it goes up, the state gets this windfall of revenues. But it's very unpredictable and it's very volatile. And it's one of the biggest problems in state budgeting is the fact that the state has an extraordinarily volatile revenue structure. And nobody can predict what's going to happen to it.
But let me interrupt you. Dan Walters is my guest, syndicated columnist, calmatters.org. What happened to the proposal of taxing capital gains on unrealized gain throughout the year? You don't even sell anything, but if something goes up, whose idea was that?
Well, it's kicked around in the left-wing circles of politics for some time. Essentially what it amounts to being a wealth tax or a form of wealth tax. And both a wealth tax, a straight wealth tax, and this form of wealth tax are things that those on the left have kicked around as being, quote, fairer, unquote, than the current system. But those kinds of extreme tax proposals, soak the rich tax proposals, have not gotten anywhere really in either California or nationally.
That's what I was wondering, if it was more of a California thing or a national thing?
Well, I think the unrealized gains thing has been more of a national thing, whereas the idea of just simply a straight out wealth tax has been more of a state thing. But neither of them is going anywhere. I mean, there's not any kind of support for it.
Neither of them are going anywhere, but some people are going somewhere, like the top 10% income earners in California. Are leaving? Are enough people leaving? You said 1% pays 50% of the state income tax, and this state income tax is 2/3 of all revenue. And then you said top 10% of Californians are paying for virtually the entire state income tax budget. So has there been any hit? I mean, I know not too long ago, this California state had a huge surplus. And why did that disappear?
Well, it never was there. It was a myth. it literally was a myth. It was a paper calculation based on what turned out to be totally unrealistic revenue figures, and it never existed. Now, they spent some of it that it never existed, which is why the state has a budget problem today. Is that their baseline expenditures outstrip their baseline revenue. And so that myth by the way, it's not a small myth. By the state's own calculations, they miscounted revenues, were wrong on revenue forecasts by $165 billion over 4 years.
Well, that's not too bad.
$40,000, $40 million a year. Mistake, error, and that's why the state of California has this rather substantial budget problem and chronic budget problem, because it simply spends more than it can take in. Thought they had all this money to spend.
I don't know if I should feel worse that they really didn't have the money and lost it versus it was a myth that they had the money in the first place. I don't know which is worse.
The myth is the dumber thing, I guess.
Okay, we're probably pushing up against taking a break, unless you wanted to add anything else on.
Nope.
This topic, we've
taxed ourselves to death.
We taxed our salt in the old wounds. So someone had fun column and writing the. You don't write the headlines, right?
Yeah, I do most of the time.
Oh, you do? Oh, good. Oh, we could blame you.
Unless the copy editor changes it, I put a suggested headline on it. Let's put it that way.
My guest, Dan Walters. You can find him at cowmatters.org. We'll take a quick break. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. And when we come back, it'll be a toss-up. I've got a couple of topics here, and we'll let you know when we return. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.